It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Pay no mind to me. I'm just sitting here wrestling with the pop filter on the microphone. Hey, here we are with a new broadcast week, the last full broadcast week of June 2019. Summer is two and a half full days old. This will make it three today. It is a toasty, it's a downright tropical 87 degrees here inside the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. Yeah, sometimes it's more than the little windy unit air conditioner can keep up with. So, guess what? Naked Radio. Naked Radio for the 24th day of June, 2019. And headon.live is where we live, by the way. You can send all the thank you notes for me not doing video of this to bobkincaid@gmail.com because I know you appreciate it. No naked radio. Absolutely not. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We've got a brand new week with a brand new list of morons. We will be getting to them. Yeah, I know. That's the downside of the solstice. Steve in New York says, you're not going to like this, but I'm glad the days are starting to get shorter. Man, it's downhill all the way to December. I know. That's why late spring is, my favorite time of year. Although there's a lot to be said for the glories of summer and that just funky, swampy, sticky, muggy, deep southern heat. Yeah, I like that too. Sorry, I'm just weird that way. Got a little bit of sun in D.C. last week. Didn't mean to. Now my face is falling off. Yes, the man who is so pale he burns under the refrigerator light bulb somehow managed to get, and you know, it's just a matter of like walking between, say, Capitol Hill and Union Station, that kind of thing. But, yep, a little cooked. That's okay. We'll get through. Thank you very kindly. Brother Deacon Asa still engaging in a bacchanal in Las Vegas. Lets me know, hot on both streams, Mr. Bob. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And no more of those damned No more of those humongo burgers, okay? Just don't do it. Although I got to admit, the photo he sent me of the men's room at some facility there in Las Vegas that had a picture of Donald J. Trump taped inside the urinal. We are often accused of having difficulty aiming. But you know what? If you put a picture of Donald Trump right there, I don't think anybody, that I wouldn't have any problem aiming. It'd be just like,
Yeah.
But anyway, headon.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick out a screen name and a password and click on chat room and jump into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And if you do so, you will immediately be greeted by early arrivers Will from Chicago and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not, for obviously good reasons, to fold space today because it's 97 degrees there in the face in the space folding. Quadrant of Northern California, where he resides. You'll also be greeted by Pinch Hit and moderated by Pinch Hit Midweek Chat Room Utility Moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. So that pretty well sets us up for this Friday, or this Moran Monday. I almost said Friday on the front porch. But of course, there are thanks to be extended. Thanks to subscribers over the course of the weekend. Thanks to Pamela in Washington State. Thanks to Samson. Thanks to Josh. Thanks to our buddy Dave in the blind in Taliban, Indiana. Thanks to Jim. Thanks to Philip in Far Maryland. Thank you, Philip. And thanks to our dear friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, which just sounds like a nice place to be. Thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of California. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to Bill. Thank you to Tirani. Thank you to Jamie. Thanks to, well, that's, wait a minute. Yeah, that's our Saturday and our Sunday and our Monday. So those are our subscribers for the 24th, the 23rd, and the 22nd of the month. And big thanks going out to our buddy John, who kindly provided us a Have a Show on Me, which means that we can finish fundraising for the month of June if we just raise $580. Thank you. Thank you so very much, John. And, well, hopefully we'll get that taken care of. There's some, also have some plans for the equipment fund. You know, the little gizmo, the road rig that I hope to turn into the studio rig, too. It is actually set up in its firmware for the with specific settings for the rather nice microphones that Rode RODE makes, and I'm thinking I might dip into the equipment fund for a couple of microphones for that thing, maybe hopefully in time in advance of Netroots Nation, which is going to be here before any of us knows it, the 9th. Oh, let's see. Just by way of a program note, we will have a somewhat shortened prayer meeting Wednesday this week, because I'll be covering for Malloy. Miss Molly is quite the competitive swimmer, and she's in some sort of big swim. It's a swim meet, not a swim tournament, right? Yeah, she's in some sort of big swim tournament, and so I'll be filling in around the Malloy campfire come Wednesday. But as far as Netroots Nation is concerned, yeah, that's a probably out of here on the 9th and home on the 14th-ish. Not entirely sure yet, but that's next month, and so that's 2 weeks away, which is kind of mind-blowing. Hello, Cleveland. You know, that's what you say when you go. On the whole, I'd rather be in Philadelphia. Yeah, it's in Philly. Mm-hmm. So anybody who wants to jump in, we'll take down that $580 and be done with June. Man, June has flown by. Which does kind of, as Steve intimated, give me a little bit of the... because it seems it only goes faster and faster and faster. That's true. Steve in New York is a true fan, and he'll say this. I will say this. Sticky, humid, smelly, sweaty weather does mean Marty Brenneman and formerly Joe Nuxall and Reds baseball. One of the best radio bits I ever heard. Oh,
who was the guy? A great Cincinnati broadcast legend. And I heard this way back in the 80s. It was a radio bit that suggested that the Reds play-by-play and color radio team could easily be replaced by a barking dog and a shrieking monkey. It was brilliant. It was. I could easily break into laughter just thinking about it right now. But here we are, Moran Monday, and there's so many opportunities for where to begin that I think I'll just start. I think I'll start here. Well, kind of close to home. With a piece of opinion from a member of the Republican Party here in West Virginia. Because, well, Pride Month will soon be passed, soon be over. And it has been a hell of a Pride Month. Now, there's a lot of work that's gone into trying to make people deeply uncomfortable. And it has been, well, for God's sakes, they had to cancel a pride prom in Florida because some presumably good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians said they would, they'd start shooting people. There are deeply serious stories to cover this evening. Here's a way out of the $580 fundraising hole, courtesy of Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding member of the Sorority of Lean, and a member of Queen Tracy's Reverse Oreo Society. Charlene says, $150 challenge. If it's met tonight, I'll add $50 more. So if you want to go dollar for dollar, double your money, Charlene wants to help you do it. That means that your 10 becomes 20, your 5 becomes 10, 25 becomes 50, all the way up to $150. And if that challenge gets met, then that means that we're only $230 away from being done with fundraising for the week, and that would be a huge, huge jump. And a big bite taken out of what is otherwise, well, it'd be nice to do fundraising free radio for the rest of the week. Let's put it that way. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very kindly. So I saw a story earlier today that pointed out, it was based on some polling data, and I could have sworn that I saved it. I guess I didn't. But it was as touching upon attitudes of the millennial and younger generations toward the LGBTQ community. And it showed a drop-off in acceptance and tolerance in the 20% range in a year's time. And while I didn't do a deep dive into it, the first thing I thought of, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but I thought about how, starting in about 1991, the right wing began an incessant, remorseless campaign to trash Hillary Clinton. Day in, day out. Never stopped. And eventually it reached its pinnacle, or nadir, depending on how you want to look at it, with the election of 2016, wherein so many people had formed such a negative opinion of her that coupled with the James Comey business and the Russian meddling and the skullduggery, that the current occupant was able to slime his way into the White House. And I wonder if a little bit of that can't be noted with regard to these changing attitudes among younger generations toward the LGBTQ community. Because the sliming never stops. It doesn't. And in particular, like I said, they had to cancel what was called a pride prom because the good God-fearing et ceteras threatened to shoot it up. That in Florida. Well, this let's go then to West Virginia, wherein a state senator by the name of Mike Azinger, in collusion with the Parkersburg News and Sentinel, you know, they don't have to publish these things. The Parkersburg News and Sentinel could have looked at Senator Mike Azinger and said, you know, go peddle your hate in your sick-ass church. Now, of course, this guy, this wouldn't wait for prayer meeting Wednesday, so no. But the guy has a degree in pastoral theology from God only knows, you know, draw Jesus on the Christ on the back of the matchbook school of what have you. But he was all worked up, Azinger is. He's a manager of a contracting firm. That's what he's doing with his pastoral theology degree. But the Parkersburg News and Sentinel took a look at this and said, yeah, this is going to contribute, this will contribute to the quality of debate here in West Virginia. All they had to do was ignore him. Then the most he could have done would have been to, I'm being suppressed and repressed and neglected and rejected by the godless liberal media, the Parkersburg News and Sentinel. So we're left, realistically, to think that there must be somebody on the editorial board at the Parkersburg News and Sentinel in Parkersburg, West Virginia, which is, you know, not this great big humongous journalism outfit. And, yeah, they've got to, you know, opinions expressed here do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Parkersburg News and Sentinel or Great Big Corporation of America Holding Company, which owns RIS. But they kind of do. Because when you print something this hateful, when you give your platform to expressions of this kind of hate, yeah, morons, it does reflect on you. Just like even though now he's out there quoting Bible verses about what Jesus said about hurting little kids, Joe Scarborough gave away millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars of free publicity to Donald J. Trump anytime Donald J. Trump wanted to call in and say crazy things on his program because it was great for ratings. But now Joe has found his inner Jesus, and he's castigating Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek, who's feeling the ice get a little bit thin under his feet. What with a Wall Street Journal editorial today that suggested that he should be dumped in favor of Nimrata Haley, the former governor of South Carolina, former U.N. ambassador who was conned by a couple of DJs from the Moscow Morning Zoo crew into talking to them about an imaginary country called Bonomo. I don't know why that thing didn't get legs. That was such a monumental demonstration of just how unutterably stupid Nikki Haley is.
But in the oh-ho-hum.
Thought she was talking to the president of Poland. Oh, well, that was to everybody, right? But anyway, so, you know, the News and Sentinel is on the hook for this one. Just like there's a TV station around here, and they put up some stupid story. Some area residents offended by billboard. Oh, shit. Really? It was the most news-free piece of reporting or attempted reporting I have lately seen. Probably some little intern or what have you at one of these TV stations that's owned by some right-wing conglomerate that owns TV stations in places like West Virginia. It wasn't Sinclair. But the news, it was a news story. I'm talking about a slow news day. About a billboard that was put up by an organization devoted to protecting and preserving a woman's right to choose in West Virginia. And all it says is abortion is still legal in WV. And so what do we get? This phony baloney news story. Some people are offended. And they quoted a couple of, you know, I have children, and I don't think this billboard don't need to be here. It's like they don't love children. And then the story contains some line like, we were unable to find anyone being supportive of the billboard. Did you try calling the organization that put the billboard up? Or maybe any members of that organization? Or anybody who is liberal in West Virginia? Call me dumbasses. I'll tell you I support it because I support constitutional rights. How about that? Constitutional rights. Yeah. But anyway, back to the Parkersburg News and Sentinel morans that they are this Moran Monday. Yeah. We'll go without the Calliope music, but damn.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Precisely. And so, in having received this toxic, filthy, hateful screed, the editorial board at the Parkersburg News and Sentinel said, well, what the hell, why not? And so this Mike Azinger creep, who is a Republican member of the Senate from Wood County, wrote, one of my recent Facebook posts, no, really, you've got a Republican senator beginning an op-ed in the main local newspaper talking about crap that he posted to Facebook. One of my recent Facebook posts was a quote from the late Presbyterian preacher D. James Kennedy. D. James Kennedy used to run Coral Snake Ministries, or something like that, down in Florida, and he spent all of his time fundraising off the backs of gay people. Tolerance is the last virtue of a depraved society. When you have an immoral society that has blatantly, proudly violated all of the commandments of God... Yeah, including that one about not eating shrimp or wearing clothing of mixed fibers. Pretty sure D. James wore a Dacron polyester shirt or two in his life, and that must mean that he's down there forever stewing in the fires of hell, Oh, well. All the commandments of God! There is one last virtue they insist upon, tolerance for their immorality. Tolerance in the face of the violation of the commandments of God is no virtue at all. Don't order the shrimp, Mike. Kid ever get mouthy with you, Mike? Did you take him outside to the city gates and call the elders together and then throw rocks at him until he was dead, Mike? That's one of your commandments of God there, Mike. Make sure that your wife keeps her mouth shut in church. That's another one of those rules, Mike. He was mad at the Parkersburg News and Sentinel. Tolerance in the face of the violation of the commandments of God is no virtue at all. The Parkersburg News and Sentinel embraced such tolerance in its Sunday edition. Sunday, with a front-page story of the LGBTQ event last Saturday at the Parkersburg City Park. Sexual deviancy is going mainstream. There's no photos here, but I'm guessing that there was no wild sex in the Parkersburg City Park. What he means by sexual deviancy is that, you know, some guys or some women held hands or maybe smooched or something. Someone, deviancy, goddammit, I gotta get home. Yeah. But is it okay because society says it's okay? Who makes the decision of what is right and wrong? Well, Mike Azinger, Republican, good God-fearing, upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, who doesn't say a goddamn word in this editorial about children being kept in cages on the southern border, well, he thinks it's up to him and his bizarre, theocratic, freak friends. There was a time in America not too long ago. Wait. But is it okay because society says it's okay? Well, generally, that's how the rules work. Who makes the decision of what is right and wrong? First principles begin somewhere. They are the universal, absolute truths that define for us what is right and what is wrong. They are the principles that we don't argue to, but that we argue from, the starting point, the fountainhead. That's right there, the fountainhead is. That's a little tell there. Oh, he must be an Ayn Rand type. There was a time in America not too long ago. You know, should I be doing this in a John Wayne voice? Let's see if it works better that way. There was a time in America not too long ago that the Bible was that fountainhead, that teacher of first principles, that arbiter of right and wrong. That is quickly fading. My John Wayne needs some work. Who defines marriage? Who defines sexuality? There was a day in our country when God defined both. Actually, no, because God has never spoken. He hasn't been seen in millennia. God defines sexuality in his word and is quite well intolerant. Male and female created he them, Genesis says concerning Adam and Eve. Not Adam and Steve, as they're so fond of saying. But then it turns out that he's a liar because he uses a fake quote from Martin Luther that Martin Luther never made. And because he's operating in the grips of the goddess of irony, the next paragraph begins, "The false philosophies that brought the folks to the LGBTQT event," LGBQT, that's "is where the present-day battle..." So he cites a piece of false philosophy and then accuses someone else of it. And it all comes down, of course, to the fact that he's relying for guidance and immutable law on people who were baffled by Wyatt Raines and wheelbarrows, who hadn't quite figured out the magic of iron yet and were still out there working on the ratio for the tin-nickel ratio for a really, really kick-ass bronze blade. But, you know, here we are. 4 days past West Virginia Day, and naturally there's a Republican out there who's more than happy to bring shame to the entire state and make us look like a bunch of hate-filled rubes some more. And I'd be lying if I said that I don't resent that. Because I do. There's a lot of good that goes on here. Mike Azinger isn't one of them. And you have to wonder, you have to ask yourself about the people who live in his district, his senatorial district. Damn. But, you know, manages a contracting firm, but when he's not out there trying to figure out how many pre-made roof trusses to order, yeah, by golly, he's worrying about how the Homer sectionals have the sexy time. Or, you know, maybe one of these days we'll just, you know, he'll get caught behind a Walmart somewhere with a man in his mouth and we'll understand it all better than we do now. It happens, you know. It does. Because when I read that story, I immediately thought of another story. It came from the Houston Chronicle. It has to do with a fellow by the name of Stephen Bratton. And Stephen Bratton has a long history of raising hell about the precious little fetuses. In fact, he got behind a bill that mercifully failed in Texas recently that would have possibly executed women in Texas for getting an abortion. Would have made getting an abortion for a woman a capital felony. He said that was just what Texas needed. Stephen Bratton did. Well, Stephen Bratton, kind of keeping a low profile now. He had been pastor of Grace Family Baptist Church in Cypress Station, Texas. But he isn't anymore. Because this past Friday, he was charged with continuous sexual abuse of a child. 43 years old, Stephen Bratton, and the criminal report says that he engaged in inappropriate touching that escalated to sexual intercourse multiple times a day or several times a week from 2013 to 2015. Yep. To the church's credit, they immediately canned his ass. Well, it's not so much to the church's credit as it is to the church's concern about possibly being left flapping in the breeze by their insurance company. Here's the kicker, though. Now, this guy raped a child every day, and sometimes several times a day, between 2013 and 2015. The judge in the case set his bail at $50,000. He promptly made the bail and is walking free on the streets of, I guess, Cypress Station, Texas, even as we speak. Now, on the other hand, I imagine that if we were to do a quick survey of the jail population of Harris County, Texas, that's Houston, isn't it? Pretty sure that's Houston. You would probably find no small number of people incarcerated in said county jail, awaiting trial because they couldn't afford $500 bond or $1,000 bond. You might find somebody who'd been, say, charged with stealing a car on $50,000 bond and not walking the streets, or God knows, even driving them. Because America. The vast majority of those people who could not make a $500 bond, if things, I mean, because this is how the system is designed, it's not a flaw, it's a feature, will probably be people who are either both A, poor, or B, of a minority status, or C, both. Again, feature, not flaw. But up until the moment when he was busted, and this is important, up until the moment he was busted, Stephen Bratton was a natural ally of the aforementioned Mike Azinger, West Virginia State Senator from Wood County. Now, I'm not saying they ever met. They probably didn't. But Mike Azinger, in addition to worrying a lot about what other people do when the lights go out or stay on, you know, I'm sure for Mike it's when the lights go out. Well, he worries a lot about the precious little fetuses too. Again, he doesn't worry so much about little youngins down on the southern border, but again, we'll get to that. And so, had they passed on the street, one wearing his Stop Abortion Now t-shirt, and the other one's his Stop the Gays from Getting Married, they would have said, "Hail feller, well met," to each other, and probably embraced in a completely non-homoerotic way, right there in the middle of the street. Well, I'm not sure about that non-homoerotic part, but trying to give the benefit of the doubt. Meanwhile, there in Orange County, California, there's still some Republicans left. Might be one less soon. Assemblyman Bill Brough, B-R-O-U-G-H. At least three women have come forward. Saying he made unwanted sexual advances during the time when he was on the Dana Point City Council. His victim, County Supervisor Lisa Bartlett, said, "I couldn't move. I didn't know who it was at first. It really startled me. Then I realized it was Bill. I remember looking up at him saying, 'What are you doing? Let go of me.' He wouldn't let go and said something to the effect of, 'Let's get out of here. Let's go and drink and do something.' And I just kept saying, 'Let go of me, Bill. Let go of me.'" "It's not politically motivated," Bartlett continued. "Simply isn't. It's something that I never even really wanted to talk about, but it will affect change in the positive direction to help save other women from encountering Bill Brough's behavior. Then, to me, it's worth it." And then, ding, here comes woman number two, a real estate agent from Laguna Beach. She said it happened about 5 years ago. Ding, a third woman, unnamed, submitted a complaint with the California Assembly. Those details have not been reached released due to confidentiality, public record, right. Three. Which brings us to E. Jean Carroll. And Friday, and this is by way of excuse, I suppose, it's not sufficient, but Friday, having returned from D.C., I was anxious to get on the air, and the story was breaking, and we talked about it ever so briefly later in the program. But E. Jean Carroll, an advice columnist, recounted her experiences being raped by Donald Trump. Raped. Trump, in turn, issued a vigorous denial. I've never even heard of her. I've never even seen her. Never been anywhere near her. This, of course, was negated by the photograph of him and E. Jean Carroll that accompanied the story in the magazine article about the book, which E. Jean Carroll has written. And I apologize wholeheartedly for not spending more time on the story. Because usually with a story like this, I assume that it will get heavy airplay among other people who do these sorts of programs. But it turns out that the story sunk like a stone. And the New York Times almost pretended it didn't happen. There was such a firestorm over it that staff editor Laura Takanaga said, after an article last week reported the advice columnist E. Jean Carroll's rape allegations against President Trump, some readers accused the Times of downplaying the story. Many have written to ask us why we didn't give the allegations more attention on our website and in print. Some questioned whether the lack of prominence showed too much deference to the president's denials, or whether it even suggested misogyny or an unwillingness to believe the victim's account. Notice the many and some usage of the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda style manual there. Then executive editor Dean Baquette chimed in and said, well, yeah, the coverage was inadequate. In the Times reporting on the Weinstein and O'Reilly cases, editors developed an informal set of guidelines for when the Times would publish such allegations. Those guidelines include locating sources outside those mentioned by the accusers who not only corroborate the allegations but are willing to go on the record. But the Carroll story was different, because the allegations were already receiving broad attention, with the New York Magazine publishing an excerpt from Ms. Carroll's book detailing the incident. And then editor Baquette, in retrospect, the allegations were already being discussed by the public. The fact that a well-known person was making a very public allegation against a sitting president should have compelled us to play it bigger. You know, with an allegation of something as vile and heinous as rape, if I could offer just a little bit of advice from a guy who's been practicing the art of word knowing for a while. Dean, buddy, I don't think I'd use the word play in describing the process by which a determination was made whether to give more prominence to the story.
Should have compelled us to play it bigger.
Play. A rape story is play. Maybe that's part of the problem, because the language we use is an indication of the attitudes we maintain. I apply that as freely to myself as to anyone else. But when you say play it bigger with regard to a story of the President of the United States at a time when he admittedly wasn't President of the United States, raping a woman, and not just a woman, but the 16th or 17th or 20th or 23rd or 52nd woman to come forward saying, oh yeah, I was raped by Donald Trump. When you use the word play, you give yourself away. And you demonstrate that this is all just, well, what word do we use with play? What is the predicate to the verb play? A game. This is just a game. And so what? We're on our way to 24 women having said that Donald Trump raped them, touched them inappropriately. To be clear, committed felonies against them. And he denies it, and ho-hum, we move on. The Supreme Court of the United States now has two credibly accused sexual violators on its bench. This says something about the United States of America. It says something about the process whereby such persons can wind up in such positions of power. Play. Should have compelled us to play it bigger. Play. You know, he should probably extend a mea culpa for that sentence all by itself. But speaking of playing, let's play a game. The name of this game is What If It Was Barack Obama? Yes, that long period of dead air silence there was just to acknowledge the moment that it'll take to shriek a little bit and recognize that there would be 50-point banner headlines, Obama a rapist, across the New York Times every day for a year and a half, or however long it took to completely, to run him out of office. See also Bill Clinton. Ron in Raleigh with a question. I'm curious, says Ron, how many women would have to accuse you or me of rape and or sexual misconduct before we would have a room in the Gray Bar Hotel? I'm guessing it would be a far lower number than 16. When people think you have money, you can get away with anything. That's the one thing Donald Trump told the truth about. Rape has no statute of limitations, so I guess that orange bastard will be hauled in after his time in office. Nah, who the fuck am I kidding? Because the other side of the coin is that when pressed on the issue, E. Jean Carroll said, I'm not interested in pursuing a criminal charge against him because it would be demeaning to all the other women that he raped. Or words to that effect. I'm pretty close. And I have to confess, and I realize that this is freighted with male privilege, white privilege, mostly male privilege, that was a little bit of a curious explanation. To have said, look, it was 20 years ago, and I sat on it until now because I just didn't want to make a big stink about it. She did say, I moved on, and that's the end of it. Some women, I guess, can do that, but obviously it is still buried in her in the makeup of her person. But, well, then again, there's power and there's power. Stephen Bratton in Houston, Texas, does not have the monumental power of the presidency of the United States. Dude gets charged with raping a child every day and sometimes several times a day between 2013 and 2015. And $50,000 bond is all he gets. You know, a guy, I would think that a guy who did that would be a potential threat to society. And the purpose of setting bail is supposed to be in a sort of universe of justice. It's not about extracting, because there's been no conviction, it's not about imposing some level of punishment, but you use an amount of money sufficient to make sure that if tempted, the accused will not succumb to that temptation and do a crime while he's out. Given the ease with which Mr. Bratton came up with the bail, he probably just put his house up, okay? Remember, he's a Baptist preacher, so he's not living on rice and beans. And Grace Fellowship in Cypress Springs, Texas, is probably, I don't know, anybody want to look up the picture? But you get my point. That badass attorney general in New York might want to investigate. And frankly, E. Jean Carroll, apart from saying I refuse to cooperate, wouldn't have a lot of say-so in the matter. Yep, David in South Carolina Stand says, any accusation against any Clinton would be 24/7 front page breaking news long after the news had broken. Steve in New York points out, the real reason the for-profit media didn't report it is because it's not news. It is sadly nothing new to have a story that Donald J. Trump raped someone else. And he's gotten away with it all his life. All his life. Wow.
Tornado warning.
Oh, time out.
Tornado warning.
Okay, tornado warning. Talk to you later. If I can come back, I'll come back. Later. That's not a watch. That's a warning. You don't screw around with something like a tornado warning. And things are weird enough that, you know, you take them seriously. It'll be passed in 15 minutes, and it was for an area about, 40 miles west of here. So here's what I'm doing. Assuming that everybody hasn't just bailed out and said, you know, Bob's done. I opened the, no more naked radio, and I opened the studio door so that I can see what's coming from the west. And there is bad stuff coming, but I wanted to let you know that we're okay. And should be, although some pretty massively hateful thunderstorms are scheduled for the area. Agnes is apologizing. Tell everybody I'm so sorry. Well, Agnes has nothing to apologize for. But yeah, thunderstorms are in the forecast for the next 3 hours or so. We'll see how it plays out. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. What you have to understand, here's the deal. What you have to understand is that Donald Trump does not consider what he's done as rape or sexual assault. Those acts are just what he's entitled to. Remember, he wanted five juveniles who were innocent of a crime he's guilty of to do the hot squat in Old Sparky, even after the real rapist confessed. The man was and still is a menace. Unless he has developed ED, he'll probably repeat offend. Well, that's the problem. Sexual prowess and sexual ability has nothing to do with rape. It is a power crime, a violence crime, and even if he could not achieve the full effect, he could still be willing to try. So he probably, ED or no ED, remains a danger to society, a menace, if you will, to society. I'm not really sure. Randy says, please post to Twitter. I'm not really sure what to put on Twitter. I'm still here, and I'm going to sit here until I don't know. Because the old folk wisdom that attaches to some of this stuff is that, the birds will go all quiet and stuff. Well, everything was real quiet out there. It was bound to rain. Grass got mowed today. I mean, that's the surest way to make it rain. All these drought-stricken states, you know, the best thing to do is just mow your grass and it'll rain on you, being a smartass. So we'll continue from there, because where I haven't gotten to yet is the biggest story of... and thank you to Keith and to Glenn. We've only got $130 to go. We're at the beginning of the second hour of the program. Only got $130 to go to meet Charlene's challenge. So 13 people at $10, that'll be all 15 people. Get your money doubled, because doubled and then some. I just can't figure out what the right fraction is. If Charlene's challenge gets met, she kicks in another $50 beyond it. And so, like I said, that would take us down to $230 to go to have fundraising free radio for the rest of the week. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Keith, so far. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, letting me know that still loud and clear on. And that's the other thing. As soon as I hear the first peal of thunder, I'm sure the interweb tubes will crash. It will, corkscrew into the ether or whatever. Yeah, well, you'll have that. But no, Yeah, I've said that for a long time. Flavio with a note. Refugee children at the border. Jesus said, suffer the little children and forbid them not to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. I think they're misinterpreting, Flavio says, the meaning of suffer. Well, God, going all the way back to the early aughts, I said that they were reading that as in their conserva Bibles, not as suffer the little children to come unto me, but come on, let's make them little children suffer. They certainly didn't give much of a damn about little children when they started that filthy little war against the innocent people of Iraq. Nope. Thank you, Ralphs, for jumping in. So down now 120. We touched on the concentration camps, and all last week, of course, while I was gone, Republicans were tearing at their hair and rending their garments and sitting in sackcloth and ashes. No, they weren't. They were just shrieking like banshees because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, having a great big public platform, finally called what's going on at the southern border by its name. Now, I'm on record because there's an archive. I'm on record as having been calling these things concentration camps for a long time, simply because they fit the definition. Another thing that I've said for a very long time is that we make a terrible mistake, and we have made a terrible mistake, in presuming that the lack of snappy black uniforms means that nobody can be engaging here in fascism. Dangerous assumption, that. Because, well, what's going on at the southern border, we now know, are concentration camps. You have one facility that is rated for 105 people, and it has over 500 in it. Of the 105 who are supposed to be able to be kept there, none are supposed to be kept there more than 72 hours. Before they are transferred further into the system and presumably better circumstances. It took a lot of work for some heroic lawyers to get into these facilities, but what they found when they got in was shocking to them and will not soon leave their consciousness. Little children being assigned to take care of other little children. Children whose diapers haven't been changed in God alone knows how long. Being left to be cared for, again, by slightly older children. Flu outbreaks that could kill God knows how many. Lice. And here's a little factoid to consider. Most of us are familiar with the Diary of Anne Frank. Anne Frank did not die in Nazi gas chambers. It's my understanding that Anne Frank died because of the filthy conditions in the Nazi camps. She died, in fact, of typhus. And typhus is one of the diseases that is carried by lice. Well, what the legal team found when they got inside was that flu and lice outbreaks were being left unattended. Guards ignoring it. The part that'll make your blood boil, and I'll read it directly from the New Yorker article. This is by one of the witnesses who went in, speaking to the New Yorker interviewer. Oh, I know what I wanted to tell you. This is important. So on Wednesday, we received reports from children of a lice outbreak in one of the cells where there were about 25 children. Tuck that away. 25 infants in a cell. And what they told us is that 6 of the children were found to have lice. And look, lice is not an indictment of anyone who gets it. Them gets lice. Lice are a parasite that happens to prey on human beings. It's not a character judgment to have been infested with lice. Six of the children were found to have lice, and so they were given a lice shampoo, and the other children were given 2 combs and told to share those 2 combs, 2 lice combs, and brush their hair with the same combs, which is something you never do with a lice outbreak. 1 person, 1 comb. Then again, this is a country that isn't particularly good with 1 person, 1 vote, so lice combs are probably an implement too far. So here's what happened. 1 of the combs was lost, and Border Patrol agents got so mad they took away the children's blankets and mats. They weren't allowed to sleep on the beds, and they had to sleep on the floor on Wednesday night as punishment for losing the comb. So you had a whole cell full of kids who had beds and mats at one point, not for everybody, but for most of them, who were forced to sleep on the cement. Let that sink in. How sadistic is that? Guess what? That's Nazi concentration camp sadistic. You lost the 1 comb. Well, we're taking the other comb away from them. These are expensive. The taxpayers of the United States paid for them combs. You don't have any respect for the... Wait a minute. You don't even speak English. Hell, you don't speak Spanish. Speak some dialect of Mayan. What do you know about lice combs? That's America. That's us. Right now, this instant. But meanwhile, Republicans are out tying themselves in knots because they got a sad from a freshman congresswoman who dared to call a concentration camp a concentration camp. How about that? Yeah. Republicans are more worried about the words we use than about what's happening to the children in the places where they don't agree with the words being used. They're more worried about the words than they are the children. What happens when a flu outbreak really gets going? What happens when it becomes an epidemic? Well, we have evidence that suggests that a child's fever can be allowed to go as high as 106 degrees before anybody will even bother to send the child to the hospital. And what's the response from the Trump regime?
Well, Obama was doing it. I got this from Obama.
Liar! Liar, 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 liar. Filthy liar. It is true that there were detention centers before Donald Trump. It is not true that mothers were separated from their babies. That is a creation of this regime. That is the doing of this criminal, out of control, fascist regime. But don't worry, Donald Trump. I wouldn't want you to have a sad. Because, of course, there's someone there to defend him. Remember when Black Lives Matter got going, and all the little white Republicans and conservatives said, "No, all lives matter." Well, leading that charge, of course, were the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And if nothing else, they're predictable. Enter the Fox Morning Zoo crew. And I warn you, this is sickening. I mean, disgusting. And entirely predictable. And a blast from the past. It was almost exactly a year ago today when Brian Kilmeade, I'm sorry, went on air to declare that there's no problem, there's nothing to be ashamed of at the southern border, because, and these were his words a year ago, these aren't our kids. These aren't our kids. And we all know the problem has been a growing one. Think back to April 6th of this year. When Border Patrol agents found four bodies near the Rio Grande in South Texas. Two of the children were infants, one was a toddler, and the adult was a 20-year-old woman. These are not accidents. And of course, it's all made worse by a certain pathology that afflicts Donald Trump. We've seen it with North Korea. We're seeing it now with Iran. He has this hang-up wherein he creates a crisis, creates chaos, and then purports to solve it. That's what that whole kerfuffle was about.
I saved 150 lives.
And he does it over and over and over again. And this is, you know, this is why we are where we are. And, I mean, I'm kind of speechless in all of this. Because we are powerless to stop him. Or, well, we're not powerless to stop him. But no one who has the power to stop him is willing to use that power. And it is having deadly consequences for the little ones at the border. Not that he cares. No, now that the E. Jean Carroll story is getting legs again, because the New York Times didn't play it right. Well, the nitwit Nero has sat down with the Hill publication and said he couldn't have raped E. Jean Carroll. Dear God, get the hockey puck. Because, and I quote, "She's not my type." I'll say it with great respect. Number one, she's not my type. Number two, it never happened. It never happened, okay? Not my type is not a defense to a credible accusation of rape. Because rape isn't... Well, Jesus Christ. Meanwhile, E. Jean Carroll describes it with considerable detail. She says he just went at it. He cornered her in a dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman. He pulled down my tights and it was a fight. So today, asked by The Hill, Trump said, "Totally lying. I don't know anything about her. I know nothing about this woman. I know nothing about her. She is, it's just a terrible thing that people can make statements like that." And in terms of the photograph of him standing with her, well, there's an excuse for that, too. "Standing with a coat on in a line, give me a break, with my back to the camera. I have no idea who she is." You know, there's only one way, and this is recognized in what in our long history of jurisprudence. If you want to find out if somebody did something, you make them testify. Now, in older societies, and this just speaks to our sort of antiquated notions on truth-telling, say in ancient Rome, a woman or a slave could not testify unless they had first been tortured real good to make sure they were telling the truth. They kind of had that backwards. No, they had that backwards. Because when you start torturing somebody, they'll say anything to make the torture stop. So, with the arrival of people like Henry II... and the rise of the power of Parliament when John got on the throne, and the Magna Carta, and that laundry list of rights and obligations that forever changed legal thinking in Mary Oldie, you eventually reach what we have today. The notion that if you want to find the truth of the matter, you get a group of impartial people together, and you present the evidence to them in as neutral a way possible. You explain to them what the law is, and then within the framework of that law, they determine what the facts are. Or, as Steve Miller noted in Take the Money and Run, what the facts is. The group of people is a jury. The people presenting the evidence are the prosecution and the defense. And that's the only way we will ever have of determining just how many people Donald Trump raped. Apart from that, we're helpless. And I go back to what I said earlier, that I've come to the conclusion that Donald Trump is laboring under some sort of mental disability that probably extends all the way back to birth. I don't know if he was deprived of oxygen or if he just... Because the only way that Mommy and Daddy Trump... Who's a smart boy? Who's a very smart boy? Yes, who didn't potty in his hands today? Yes, that's our smart Donald. Is somebody who doesn't have it all together. And so he's probably operating with like an 80-something IQ at best. Because it didn't even dawn on him that by saying that she wasn't his type is a confession by him that he would have gladly raped the daylights out of her if she had been his type. And when you're dealing with 16 women, that kind of means that statistically one of those is going to be his type, or even several. And by the way, 20-some years ago, however long ago it was, E. Jean Carroll was his type. Go look up the photos. Totally lying. I mean, what is he, a valley girl? Meanwhile, over on CNN today, it was time for the I Am Shocked, Shocked segment featuring Brooke Baldwin, who is still having a hard time figuring out those economically anxious Trump voters.
President Trump is facing a new accusation of sexual assault, this time from an advice columnist and writer named E. Jean Carroll. Carroll says this happened back in the 1990s in a department store dressing room. Carroll first detailed the incident in a book excerpt, which was published in New York Magazine. And in part, she writes, quote, "The moment the dressing room door is closed, he lunges at me, pushes me against the wall, hitting my head quite badly, and puts his mouth against my lips. I am so shocked, I shove him back and start laughing again. He seizes both my arms and pushes me up against the wall a second time. And as I become aware of how large he is, he holds me against the wall with his shoulder and jams his hand under my coat and pulls down my tights."
Now, let's be clear. When she says how large he is, she's talking about his physical height, size. Yeah. Right.
CNN spoke with Carroll about her accusations. So here is CNN's Sarah Murray.
Describe what happened, 23.
Author and columnist E. Jean Carroll standing firmly behind her claim that Donald Trump sexually assaulted her in a department store dressing room 2 decades ago.
The minute he went like this, I preceded him into the dressing room. The minute he closed that door, I was banged up against the wall.
So, yeah, there's 8 minutes of this. And then there's a conversation with Gloria Borger.
I mean, Carroll is one of at least 15 women who've made accusations against the president. You know, this is, of course, taking place in the wake of Me Too. To George Conway's point, why do you think supporters of Juanita Broderick's claims don't see dismissing Carroll's claims as hypocritical?
I think they don't believe her. I think if they went out there and supported Donald Trump during the last election, and don't forget, Donald Trump denied these claims, many of them in the same way, saying, I don't remember this woman, I never met this woman, et cetera, et cetera, that they're now, in a way, they're sort of boxed in, and they have to continue to say, this woman is just trying to sell her book, as Donald Trump said. Juanita Broderick wasn't trying to sell a book. She made a lot more sense to me.
You know, this segment wouldn't have gone on nearly as long if Gloria Borger had simply cited the true answer, the factual answer, namely, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Again, 50-point headlines, Obama charged with rape, would have been on every newspaper in the country every day for a year or more. But with Trump, the rapist, well, we know he's a serial rapist, so ho-hum. And there's nothing anybody can do about it anyway. So, Kyle asks, what'll it take to remove this piece of shit from the office of the presidency? If raping over a dozen women, lying about it, committing treason, lying about it, kidnapping babies and placing them in concentration camps, destroying our climate, redistributing our tax money to the wealthy, destroying what little bit of health care we actually have, shipping jobs overseas, selling weapons to terrorists, allowing Saudi Arabia to murder a Washington Post journalist, locking reporters out of the White House press room, and screaming that the DOJ, FBI, CIA, other intelligence agencies, and Hillary fucking Clinton should be locked in jail for an investigation into his campaign's crimes that started when his campaign operative ran his mouth, isn't sufficient evidence to warrant an impeachment of this fucker, then what is? I know, Kyle. And every one of those things is sufficient to impeach. That's not the problem. Sufficient to convict is the problem. Otherwise, impeachment is a hollow act. Political theater. How do you shame a Republican into actually doing the right thing? At this point in time, I don't think it's possible. It wasn't possible in the Clinton matter, and it's not possible now. Arnold pointing out, yeah, it's an absolute admission of guilt, that not my type line. But sometimes, when one shaves with Occam's razor, one does realize that the simplest answer is most often the correct one. And in this case, the simple answer is that if you're a Republican, you get away with this. If you are a Republican president, you get away with this. Democrats don't. Now, delving into the whys and wherefores of all that is another matter entirely. Why is it that Republicans get away with it and Democrats don't? Well, because Republicans tend to be authoritarians. And Republican authoritarians will do what the leadership says. When you march, when they say march, you march. When they say stop, you stop. And when they say look the other way and don't pay any attention to the racist in the White House, that is exactly what happens. And there's a media infrastructure to back it all up. Whitewater never would have gotten anywhere as far as it did without the connivance and complicity of the New York Times and other papers and CNN and Fox and ABC, CBS, NBC. They couldn't run enough salacious Clinton stories in a given day. So you can't overlook that. And I guess that's the answer. And while impeachment is easy peasy for a conclusion for us to reach, it has not gotten that kind of legs in the House. What are we up to, maybe 70 members of the House? Counting Justin Amash, who are for impeachment? Maybe. Now, on the other hand, if we wait and we let the subpoena cases play out and those are rendered final decisions, it becomes a lot more like a slam dunk to impeach. And I realize there's a whole bunch of people out there who just know all the way down to their toenails that they're so much smarter than Nancy Pelosi and that they would be so much a better Speaker of the House, but she's Speaker of the House right now. And she gets to make the call. And when she lets slip, remember the line, cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. Well, it's not going to be like the Clinton impeachment. This is going to be vicious. And I think some people actually know how vicious it's going to be. It's going to be dangerous. People may get killed. The maggots aren't kidding. Are you following what's going on in Oregon? Because they didn't like the fact that Oregonians don't want Republicans running their legislature. The Oregon Senate Republicans have bugged out. You know, kind of like the Senate Democrats did in Wisconsin a few years back. But there's a difference. The Oregon Senate Democrats don't have enough members to form a quorum. They need 20, they've got 18. So the Republicans have bailed out because of a climate change bill. Oh, yeah, a climate change bill. And they're being led by an absolute, I guess you could call him a Bundy acolyte. Who said, when they said that the state, that when the governor authorized the state police to look for those senators, he said, send bachelors and give them plenty of armor, because I'm not going to be held hostage. And then the Oath Keepers and the Three Percenters, who are fascists, pure and simple, said they were more than happy to launch an assault on the state capitol in Oregon. Because, among other things, at the state capitol in Oregon, you can carry guns. The Three Percenters said they would provide security, transportation, and refuge to the Senate Republicans in Oregon and do whatever it takes to keep these senators safe. No one's threatening to hang the senators. The state police is authorized to bring them back to do their damn jobs. Vote against the bill. Welcome to democracy. You lose. Meanwhile, the Republicans are all horribly, horribly butthurt. One of them bringing a sign that says, I'm a Republican, arrest me. And, of course, there's always money involved. So Stand With Our Senators PAC was launched on June the 20th. And there's also a GoFundMe that raised $30,000 in 24 hours. Republicans in Oregon and around the country are more than willing to give money to Oregon Republican senators to keep from having democracy happen in the Oregon legislature. That $30,000 jerk could have bought a shit ton of soap and toothbrushes and toothpaste at the concentration camps at the border, couldn't it? But they're ready to start shooting. That's the point. They're eager to start shooting. And they say that they are going to stay out of the government. They'll stay away from the Oregon State Capitol until the session closes on June the 30th. All so that Oregon and its majority of elected representatives can't take action on climate change. Then the Oregon GOP, because they're liars, sent out a tweet that said, heavily armed militia lays siege to Oregon's capital as Senate Democrats cower in fear. And of course, it's from a protest, people holding signs that say save jobs, etc., etc. Nobody all gunned up. Only problem was, that was from a protest by loggers. It wasn't the three percenters and the oath keepers who had sworn to use their goons to get their way. A little bit of pushback coming from Lee in New York. Impeachment is a hollow act. I'll disagree with you on this. Donald Trump has been energizing the Republican base for years. Democrats are so cautious they gave their base nothing to vote for. They don't try to achieve. This is why Democrats will not get their base to vote. If they do not like them but do not care enough to vote for you, you will never win. I disagree. You know why? They give their base nothing to vote for. My God in heaven, look at the bills. The stack of bills that this Senate, there, that this House of Representatives under Democratic control have passed and sent to the Senate, and the Senate refuses to do its job. Those bills touch on everything. The Dream Act, the Voting Rights Act, ethics among congressional members, bills to fund the government and keep it running. It's all there. They've proven that they're willing to do the work. They've given us plenty to vote for. But if we're going to judge them solely on the fact that they haven't yet impeached a president, when the best part of the evidence hasn't been fully developed, I don't know what to say. Because it is a hollow act. An impeachment that does not yield a conviction accomplishes nothing. Or in the case of Bill Clinton, well, remember, it massively increased his national popularity. But then again, Donald Trump is nowhere near the approval numbers that Clinton had. So that's what we have to take into consideration. Trump energizes his base with fear and hatred. It can be a powerful motivator, but it also has a limited shelf life. If you saw his shrieking rally the other night, you know that people began to walk out because they'd seen it before. There were empty seats. And he spent his entire speech campaigning against Hillary Clinton, who is not running for president. And meanwhile, we also have to take into account that we kind of live in a little bubble here. We're right. Everybody else is wrong. It's absolutely true. But there's nothing. There's nowhere near a hefty majority of support for impeachment yet. I chalk that up to the fact that most people in the United States know more about the finer points of how you get on Survivor or Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune than they do about the operations of the government of the United States as delineated in the Constitution. I think if you had more people with greater civic literacy, you'd probably have a higher number of people supporting impeachment. I'm ready for it right now. Even though the evidence isn't complete, let's just do it. Let's just do it. Quit fooling around. Let's not wait until the documents that could really nail him up come in. That could take too long. Let's do it now. Let's use the emoluments clause. Granted, the cases haven't reached their natural conclusion, but let's use it anyway. And, that laundry list that Kyle presented us with. I mean, the Russian business. The concentration camps. The concentration camps themselves are enough to support a bill of impeachment. Redistributing our tax money to the wealthy, well, that wasn't just Donald Trump, that was the Republicans in Congress, and that's really not going to be on a bill of impeachment. Trying to take health care away, that's not going to be there either. Shipping jobs overseas, not an impeachable offense. James says, not true. Impeachment is an indictment served up to the American people. Let them decide, both on the Don and those senators who fail to hold them accountable. Fine. I mean, it's not an indictment. It is a specifically non-legal process. It is a political process. But it resembles an impeachment. A bill of impeachment resembles an indictment. True. It resembles an indictment most closely in the fact that it can be had on a simple majority vote, whereas in a criminal case, you've got to have unanimity in order to convict, and in the case of a trial in the Senate, you've got to have 67 votes, two-thirds. But I will suggest that whatever it is, the media are going to be central to putting it forward, and that media, those media, are in large part not good faith civic partners, because instead of doing things with an eye toward what's good for America, as Les Moonves famously pointed out when he said Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS, well, he's not the only one engaging in that calculus. But yeah, let's do it. Just do it. Get all Nike. Just do it. Somebody introduce a bill of impeachment and let's vote on the damn thing. I mean, why not? Somebody's been very, very patient over on the stress line. I'm going to go there. And, with a little over an hour left in the program, I sure don't want to see Charlene's challenge go by the boards. There's $120 to go on that. And it's it's important that we not let challenges go by the board, please. Ralphs and Glenn and Keith so far are in on that challenge. They've each doubled their money. There's $120 more to double there, and then if that gets met, another $50 comes in, courtesy of Charlene. founding member of the sorority of Leans. So hopefully we'll take a bite out of it. Let's finish that off, and then we can worry about the other $230. Okay? Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Glenn. And thank you very kindly to Keith, one and all. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's me, Reg from Decatur.
What's happening, Reg?
Georgia. Welcome back. Welcome back, Bob. Welcome back.
It's nice to be home. I mean, I was on the air and everything, but it's nice to be home.
Right, okay. Well, you were talking about that woman who accused Donald Trump of rape over 20 years ago, and she was sexually assaulted by him. Why didn't she just do what other women would have done and just kneed and then drop kick her right in the groin and left? You know?
Reggie, we're not in any
position.
Well, no, we're not in any position. We're not in any position to challenge how any woman responds to rape. You understand?
Right, okay.
And she makes a point of noting how much bigger he was than she was. And had she kneed him in the nuts, he might have beaten her to death.
Right.
Those moments are fraught with terror. And so we cannot impose some standard on a woman that we ourselves might not even be able to accomplish.
Right, I understand, Bob. Got it. But like as you said before, Bob, they said it about Bill Clinton, too, and they were, shall we say, they were on that, like, forever. They were talking about that, like, forever. Fats, though.
Careers were made on it.
Like, forever.
Careers were made on it.
Exactly.
Before Whitewater and before Monica Lewinsky, nobody knew who Ann Coulter was.
Right.
Okay? Right. O'Reilly became, the monster, the ratings monster he was during that same era.
Yeah. Right.
It was great. It was awesome for some people.
Right. Like Rush Limbaugh and Chuck Hannity and the rest of them.
Yeah, fortunes were made.
Right. Of course. Did that also happen over there with CNN and MSNBC?
There was no MSNBC at the time, I don't think, but it was certainly good for CNN too.
Look, I know it was.
The 24-hour news cycle and cable news channels thrive on a diet of wars and scandals. Okay, the bigger the war, the bigger the scandal, the bigger the ad buy. Okay,
and the higher the ratings. And their profits increase, right, Bob?
I remember Bush War One. I remember Bush War One. The coverage, we'd never had a cable news war before where you could turn it on any time, day or night, and there was always going to be somebody live broadcasting by pointing a camera out of an armored vehicle zipping across the Iraqi desert. We'd never had that before.
Right.
It was riveting.
Right. It was. It was riveting. Right. But, it's hypocrisy, like as you said before, it's hypocrisy that they can go after Bill Clinton for something that he didn't do or claim that he didn't do a long time ago, but yet Donald Trump gets off scot-free. You know, they don't talk about him because they're too busy talking about everything else, whether it was important or not. You know what I'm saying, Bob? Or relevant or not. Or while I'm at it, Bob, why are they still on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about the term or word concentration camp?
Because
about her using it.
Because she touched them in the tender spot. She worked the blade into their soft white underbelly, and they're twisting on it.
Right, but why do we have to apologize for everything and they don't?
Have you heard me apologize for? I've been calling them concentration camps a lot longer.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, and by the way, MSNBC, I got a correction here. Lee tells me MSNBC was founded in 1996. So, yeah, they were there.
Right. Yeah, they were there when Bill Clinton was accused of rape by Juanita Broderick and everybody else. And they couldn't stop obsessing enough about it, right? And then they went after him over Monica Lewinsky. And you know whose careers were made off of that? Now, don't we, Bob?
Yeah, you're sure.
Star, none other. And, you know, but I'm just so sick and tired of Democratic politicians apologizing for everything while the Republicans don't have to. In other words, I'm sick and tired of our side ass-kissing theirs, but they don't have to ass-kiss ours. But they screw up.
Well, you know, some of it's a matter. Hold on, Reggie. Some of it's a matter of human decency. And our side,
yes, exactly.
Our side has a shit ton more of that than theirs does.
Right.
And when you say something wrong, it's appropriate to apologize. But
right.
when you say something right and the other side has a baby over it, no, you do what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did and say, I will never apologize for saying something true.
Right.
And
I only wish that other Go ahead, Bob.
No. Other Democrats do, too.
Yeah, exactly. Why do they always have to apologize?
And they tried to trot out. I mean, it was pathetic. Steve King, of all people, a man so morally compromised, he shouldn't probably go out in public anymore. Tried to shame
right.
her by saying, "I went to Poland. I went to Auschwitz. Why won't you go to Auschwitz with real live Auschwitz survivors?"
Right.
But she
what
had.
They haven't learned.
They haven't learned anything. You know, because Auschwitz, you know, there aren't any concentration camps anymore because the Third Reich is gone. That's the argument. That's
right.
that way they don't have to ever worry about being compared with Nazis when they behave like actual Nazis. But Alexandria
right.
Ocasio-Cortez had an answer for that too. She said, "No, because the last time you went to Auschwitz, you took a side trip and sat down and talked shop with real live honest to goodness Nazis, so I'll take a hard pass on your offer there, Steve." And then she burned down
right.
Liz Cheney into the bargain.
I was about to bring her up, Bob. What did she say about or to her? Or response to her on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter? I was just about to bring her up.
She said, "Hey Liz," on Twitter, of course. "Hey Liz, you're the caucus chair. You might want to come collect your colleague before other members of your caucus start saying this quiet part out loud too." Jesus. I mean, there wasn't nothing left but a greasy
right.
spot.
Right. And why did Liz Cheney go after her by saying that she should educate herself on this kind of stuff? You know? Before she said
because,
that.
Because she's getting to the soft and tender places. Because Liz Cheney is the daughter of a goddamn war criminal with a million of civilian Iraqi dead to his credit. And she just looks like him
right.
in a bad wig.
Right. And she does. Right. She's his daughter, I guess. Right. So, and you should tell Joe Biden not to get along with people like that. That he actually gets along with Dick Cheney? Joe Biden does? What was he thinking that day when he said
well,
that?
I'll vote for him if he's the nominee.
Exactly. Oh, Joe Biden. Exactly. So, I'm glad that AOC is finally standing up to these political bullies, aren't you, Bob?
Well, she's got a talent for it, and they haven't learned that they're going to get dragged like trash to the dumpster every time they fuck with her.
Yeah, well, she's a girl from the Bronx, like she said. They don't know how to deal with her. She's from the Bronx. They don't know how to deal with a young woman like her. And I guess they're attacking her because of her ethnicity. You know, she's Hispanic, you know.
No, well, I mean, they're attacking her because she's a brownish woman. They're attacking her because she's Hispanic.
Yes.
They're attacking her because she's female. And they are most thoroughly attacking her because she has the ability to make them look terrible. And she does. And they're going to keep attacking, and they're going to keep losing.
Right. You have the ability to make them squirm like little babies. Squirm like, yeah, little babies, or crying little babies. And they don't know how to handle it. And it's like they're obsessed with her, with going after her and everybody else who's on our Democratic, liberal, leftist, progressive side instead of actually trying to fix this country, let alone this whole entire planet. If that's ever possible, you know. instead of worrying about what somebody says or thinks or does, why can't they just go back to doing politicking?
Whatever happened to the day when we had civility in the Congress and you could disagree with somebody, but you didn't have to hate their guts. There were vicious racist white supremacists in the Senate of the United States, and you know, sometimes you had to get along with them in order to get the work done. Bullshit. I call bullshit. Because as Ron and Raleigh pointed out the other day, and this is an important point, as Ron pointed out, when Joe was dealing with Herman Talmadge and James Eastland, vicious segregationist white supremacists who said things like, black people are an inferior race. I mean, and again, let's remember, that was the stated policy of the government of the United States up through the 1950s, okay? And into the 1960s, and yes, into the 1970s. It has only recently become politically unacceptable to say something that evil. It is of fairly recent vintage.
Biden was
working on an anti-busing bill.
He was.
Which was a racist thing in the first place. Biden was working on an anti-busing bill, and Eastland and Herman Talmadge agreed with him on it. He wasn't over cajoling them and backslapping them into supporting something they didn't otherwise support. They agreed with the young senator from up in Delaware. Because let's remember from a historical standpoint, Delaware was a slave state.
Right.
Okay.
It shared a common
border with another slave state, Maryland.
Right. And what did he do about that, Bob? What exactly did Joe Biden do about that when he was young?
Well, I mean, he cajoled and he backslapped and got a couple of segregationist white supremacists to agree with his bill because it fit their political ideology of white supremacy and segregation.
Right.
That's the essential problem with all of this business of Joe Biden mooning over the long-gone days of civility in the Senate.
Because one of the things that's been
forgotten is that there was one lone African American member of the Senate at that time. His name was Edward Brooke, I believe. He was a liberal Republican from Massachusetts. And he was appalled by the conviviality and collegiality of Joe Biden and James Eastland and Herman Talmadge. Yes, he was.
He was a liberal Republican.
I know they don't exist anymore. I know it's like talking about a pterodactyl, but he was a liberal Republican, and liberal Republicans were a different breed back then.
Right, they were civil, rational, thoughtful, mature, patient, compassionate, but not like you said, they're like a dime a dozen. They don't exist anymore. They're like the dinosaurs. They're gone.
There's no such thing. Yeah. Now the closest you get is
moderate Republican Susan Collins of Maine, who's only moderate until it comes time to vote for whatever Donald Trump wants.
Who said that, Bob? Which Republican said that?
Well, no, that's moderate Republican Susan Collins of Maine. She's moderate until it's time to do whatever Donald Trump wants her to do.
So she's like a mindless robot. She does whatever he tells her without any will of her own.
No, well, she's a foot soldier.
Yeah, exactly. You're the foot soldiers. They go wherever you sent them. Like in the military, right, Bob? They go wherever you sent them.
Just do what you're told. Yep.
Exactly. Without question. You're not paid to think you're paid to act.
Brett Kavanaugh. Enough said. Yeah, hey, Reggie, I'm going to roll on, brother. It's good to hear from you. I'm just kind of watching the skies turn purpler outside, so I don't know when I'm going to have to bug out, but I don't want to be in the middle of a call when I do. You take care, my friend.
Right,
we'll talk soon.
But did you hear about Joe Biden and Cory Booker going after each other?
Oh, yeah, I do, but I got to go, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man.
Bye.
Bye.
That's our buddy, Reggie, calling from Decatur. Give me a second here. All right, so we're 6 past, no time checks. As James reminds us, there was a time when they were all slave states. I think slavery had been eliminated before some of them became states while they were still colonies, but I could be wrong. Note coming in from Lady B. Bob, Clinton's impeachment was about a grown man cheating on his wife with a grown intern. Donald Trump is killing people. So if the House isn't ready to impeach, they better gather enough evidence to put this motherfucker under the jail. And that's one of the essential problems. This is not a criminal process. It does not foreclose criminal process, but in itself it is not a criminal process. My personal feeling on impeachment is the way I feel about just about any legal process. You go forward unless there's no other way. Once you have marshaled the best evidence you can have. And I still say that when the order is final, that creates a best evidence situation. It may not matter to the Republicans. I'll go so far as to say it won't matter to the Republicans, because they are a lawless group. They are authoritarians, they are autocratic, they are dictatorial, and they don't give a damn about the rule of law unless it operates in their favor. But yeah, Lady B, pull together the evidence to bury him with. Lady B continues, I like Warren and I'll entertain Bernie. But having to work this hard to get rid of this fool's embarrassing to the Democrats and our system of justice. This is dictator behavior. We're not supposed to run our country this way. The media are owned by the privileged rich. This shit is amusing to them. As far as journalism and the corporate media are concerned, it died under the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and that it did. Not the Fairness Doctrine, but the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Lady B says, independent sources are the way to get the word out. Sport Bob, y'all. Otherwise, our democracy is dead. And it's pretty much coughing up blood on the back stoop as it is. I don't have enough ego to think that I'm some critical part of getting the word out, but we gather together for our little conversation every evening. And I think, I hope that it advances the cause of a nation worth saving. I hope. And so, yeah, if we could, I can happily announce that we are down to 110 to go. Thank you to our dear sister Jude up in the Great Northwest. Thank you, Jude, so very kindly. So that's 11 more people we have who can get their money doubled in the next 50 minutes, at which point, well, good things will happen. So, with 110 to go, let's knock this down if we possibly can. Like I said to Reggie, I'm watching the sky getting weirder and weirder. Because, well, hey, West Virginia, tornadoes, of course. Don't remember this in the past. You know, you can go back. There's not. I don't think you're going to find any other This is twice in one season or a couple of months that there's been a potential bug out here. In every archive going back to the very beginning of this program, there aren't any other of those. So, thank you, Will. Will in Chicago says, your safety is paramount. Thank you. Agnes has the kitty cats and the puppy all ready to go. And she's ready to go, and Margie's ready to go, and I wish to hell I knew where Ferg was. But at any rate, we're kind of watching and waiting. If you do want to get in on the conversation, you're welcome to jump in. Both lines are open. The stress line, of course, 844-843-4676. With the same apology that I made to Reggie, I don't want to be bailing out on anybody, but if you'd like to be part of the conversation, please do jump right in. And, of course, over on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype, and 304-574-848. I haven't used it in so long. 8481, yeah. 574-8481, yeah. Jump in, but don't do it for a minute because we're going to have a couple of minutes of dead air here, and I'm going to go outside and check the sky and just see what's going on. Stand by. Never a dull moment around here. I'll be back. I'm not going to play any music or anything, but I'll be back. Okay, so the rain has started. That means the hail should be here fairly shortly. I haven't heard any thunder yet. I know that... Oh, wow. Yeah. That's that ozone-y smell. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of fresh and clean, but it also means there's been a lot of electricity in the air. But, no, the interweb tubes haven't started flickering and falling apart. So that means it hasn't gotten particularly terrifying yet. Okay, so, yeah, the ad hoc research department, this time in the form of Lee in New York, not a slave state. Bernie Sanders' maple syrup land, Vermont, abolished slavery before becoming a state. And no, he was not there for the vote. Wait a minute. Yeah, that's worthy of a cowbell. And, you know, Joe Biden wasn't there to complain about the lack of civility and all the butthurt feelings of the slave state senators. I better stop that. I'm violating my own rule. And because it has consequences. The negative stuff has consequences. I don't want to depress the vote. I'm voting for him if he's the nominee. But I'm just hoping that there's a whole bunch of people in the states whose votes matter who will keep him from being the nominee. Because I can't imagine. Can you? I mean, just let's flash forward in time. It's September. We're the day after Labor Day, 2020. The campaign is on in earnest. And we've got 2 months of absolutely relentless, remorseless, vicious campaigning going on because it's down to two nominees. How's Joe Biden going to get whatever message is Joe Biden's message? How's he going to get that message out? If all we're talking about is his dalliances with segregationists, white supremacists, and various other racists. I don't see that being a winner. And now that I'm one of those older Americans, I'm wondering how we're defining older Americans. Tracy touched on this on Friday. You know, older Americans just trust Joe Biden. How much older? I mean, are we talking about the nonagenarian vote? The octogenarian vote? I do this with real consternation. Nice guy, I'm sure. But is he the guy to lead America as climate change continues to persist as the greatest single threat, the greatest single existential threat this country faces? You know, there are a lot of reasons that people are fleeing El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. And climate change probably isn't at the top of the list, but it's part of it. There are mass migration movements all over the planet that are the result of climate change. Places that used to support human populations that can't now. That's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And if you've got somebody who's going to listen harder to the fossil fuel industries than they are the scientists who say we are out of fucking time, then we're kind of done. David in South Carolina, Stan, my vote primary. Again, South Carolina, Stan. This is the only part of the process where my vote actually counts for something. Choose wisely, David. Choose wisely, Todd. Choose wisely, all you Democrats and progressives in South Carolina. Because without, and I don't mean to sound shitty here, but we come back to something that I've said for years. Why the Democratic Party lets a state that will never, ever, ever, ever vote for a Democratic presidential nominee determine who is viable and who is not continues to be beyond me. But here we are, again, the only difference being California. And that is a game changer. Having California in March instead of June makes all the difference in the world. It'll be a make or break. Because California's electoral delegates are winner take all, I do believe. There's only two states that apportion their delegates. I think that's Nebraska and Maine. But California is not, you know, that it's not all that different from the rest of the country. And, well, it's a long way to March. And I guess we'll find out, what, Thursday night? What's going, we'll find out just what candidate Biden sounds like. Someone who works for him wrote an op-ed that was published in a Florida newspaper today in both Spanish and English, in which he went after, Biden did, went after Donald Trump for the vicious, racist things that he is doing to try to, because the torment of children at the, that's one of the things that makes the torment of children at the southern border, which is awful under, by any calculation, even more so. The fact that it is being done to motivate a bunch of racists and bigots and xenophobes who comprise his base. That's all. It's the only reason this is happening. Because he has to keep his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing freaks in a constant state of being ginned up. Take, for instance, because we talked about him earlier, Oregon State Senator Brian Boquist. Now, this guy's a maggot, okay? Pure and simple. When Governor Kate Brown dispatched the Oregon State Police to track down the Republicans who refused to do their job, State Senator Brian Boquist said, "Send bachelors and come heavily armed. I'm not going to be a political prisoner in the state of Oregon. It's just that simple. I've been in political coup attempts. I've been held hostage overseas. I've been jailed politically overseas. Not going to be arrested as a political prisoner in Oregon, period." That's just one maggot. And there are millions. Eleven senators in Oregon. All of this over Oregon's clean energy jobs bill, which would join up with California's international cap and trade market and would probably lead to other states doing the same. And then the carbon pricing market would develop and companies, businesses would have to purchase carbon allowances for emitting pollution. It's estimated that it would knock down emissions by 45% below 1990 levels by 2035. They'd be 80% below that by 2050. I don't know if that's enough, because we're working with 2029. That's the drop dead date. But here's one of the more, disturbing aspects of all of this. They have fled to Idaho, apparently. The Oregon State Police have no jurisdiction in Idaho. No body of Oregon law enforcement has jurisdiction in Idaho. And so Idaho is technically engaging in a state of warfare with the state of Oregon. Otherwise, the appropriate thing for the Idaho authorities to do would be to send the Idaho State Police, find them, and escort them to the border and turn them over to the Oregon State Police. But Idaho is a festering, seething swamp of gun nuttery, maggotry, and anti-American, anti-government sentiment. And so they won't. Meanwhile, you've got a guy swearing, you know what? If he's willing to shoot, maybe this is that moment where you take Brian Boquist at his word and channel your inner Vincent D'Onofrio from the first Men in Black movie, who looked at when the alien bug looked at Egger and said, and Egger said, "You can have my guns when you pry them from my cold dead fingers," and the alien bug said, "Offer accepted," and that was the end of Egger. Because I don't care how many goddamn guns the 3%ers and the oath keepers have. They don't have more than constitutionally sworn law enforcement does, as long as constitutionally sworn law enforcement isn't infested and infected by that same right-wing disease. So there we go. But these are the people that feed on the torment of children. And don't think that he won't that he won't ratchet it up even higher, because he's got problems. Eight of the states that Trump carried in 2016 have rising unemployment rates. Going up, not down. Mississippi, unemployment rising. South Carolina, unemployment rising. North Carolina, unemployment rising. Arizona, unemployment rising. His net approval rating in North Carolina is minus 4%. His net approval rating in Arizona is minus 6%. In both states, he won by less than 4 percentage points in 2016. States like that start falling away. And remember, he's already canned his pollsters for giving him bad news. God only knows what he'll start. But we cannot be motivated by fear. He knows there's some shit going down because he hid out at Camp David this past weekend. You never hear about him going to Camp David. He always goes to one of his properties because there's money to be made there. On Twitter, he said, "Despite a Federal Reserve that doesn't know what it is doing, raised rates far too fast, very low inflation, other parts of the world slowing, lowering, and easing, and did large-scale tightening, $50 billion a month. We're on course to have one of the best months of June in U.S. history. Think of what it could have been if the Fed had gotten it right. Thousands of points higher on the Dow, and GDP in the fours or even fives. Now they stick like a stubborn child." He's a fun one to talk about, a stubborn child. "When we need rate cuts in easing to make up for what other countries are doing against us, blew it." I'm not real tight on economics. It's not my area of expertise, if I have one at all. But I know none of that makes any sense. Interest rates are awfully damned low as it is. What? About 2.5% somewhere in that neighborhood. But he puts that out there in a desperate attempt to keep, to keep the maggots from maybe shockingly, suddenly, unexpectedly, giving a fuck about little children living in squalor, sleeping on concrete floors, eaten up by lice, burning up with flu at the southern border. And at the southern border is even problematic because they're not at the southern border anymore. Some of these hell holes, some of these shithole concentration camps are in Florida, Tennessee, Arizona, yes, Texas. Other states. And remember, this bunch of thugs doesn't even know exactly where all the babies are. Wow. Wow. And while we are at it, while we're at it, another little piece of information dribbled out in regard to the ongoing skullduggery of Bill Barr to prosecution. As a result of a request filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, CNN, the district court unsealed documents relating to Mueller's investigation. There were 65 pages released. 7 cases were closed on April 1st, April Fool's Day, 2019, 10 days after Mueller submitted his report, which to this day we have never seen in its complete form. Seven cases closed. Case closed. Case closed. Case closed. Case closed. Mueller, Bob Mueller, didn't move to close those cases. Bill Barr did. So there's that. Going back to the Oregon story, Lady B asks, Idaho? Isn't that where they have a large number of militias? Yes, it is. That's like Trump fleeing to Russia. Those guys knew exactly who to turn to for support. Fuck those racists. Darling, the military is almost seething with white supremacists, and those states are largely white. You think they'd turn against their own? I assume our military will be pulled from several states, but I'm not sure anything would go as smoothly as we'd like to think. Yeah, it's that dangerous out there. I could be exaggerating, but then again, nobody expected Trump to be elected president either. I don't think you're exaggerating, Lady B. And you, where you are in a far better position than I, where I am, to get a sense of the lay of the land. There are military bases all around you. And, of course, that area is also a hotbed of evangelical fervor, which, of course, is having abandoned any pretense of following the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, is squarely in the Trump camp. That suffer the little children business is not in their Bible. The business about anyone who would harm one of these little ones, it would be better for him had he never been born or had a millstone hung around his neck and thrown into the depths of the sea. That's not in their Bible either. Because their Bible exists in their mind, and it's peopled with white folks. And as long as the babies aren't white, they don't matter. And I wasn't kidding. Talk about a language barrier. Right-wingers lose their minds over simply hearing a foreign language spoken in their presence in this country. How many of those stories do we have? And that's just with Spanish. Imagine them hearing, say, Quiche Maya spoken. They'd be gone around the dam bend and stay. Randy points out, if the Fed, going back to the economics, if the Fed had dropped the rate to, say, 1% or below, Wall Street would gamble wildly with the free-loaned money. There's a term for free-loaned money. It's termed quantitative easing. And we did that when the market was on the verge of collapse. But it's humming right along now. And you don't do that. Because you're trying to maintain some sort of equilibrium. And trying to keep it from, well, you know, you leave Wall Street to its own devices. We know what Wall Street will do. We've seen it time and time and time again. By the way, we were walking out of the Longworth House office building the other day in D.C., and tucked into a little niche at the front of the building is a bust, marble, you know, portrait bust of Congressman Longworth, Representative Longworth. Well, representing Longworth, turns out, was Speaker of the House between, oh, for about 5 years in the 1920s. There are three House office buildings on the slope up Capitol Hill. At the top of the slope is the Cannon House office building, named after a pernicious old autocrat named Joe Cannon. Then comes Longworth, and then comes the Rayburn Building. John F. Kennedy laid the cornerstone for the Rayburn Building in 1962 and never got to see it completed. But the Longworth Building is named for, I presume he was Speaker. Let me just look him up real quick. Little historical moments. Yeah. Nicholas Nick Longworth III, according to Wikipedia, was an American Republican politician who became Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. He came from Ohio. He was a popular socialite when he got to Washington, D.C., and he married the daughter of Theodore Roosevelt, Alice Lee Roosevelt. That fell apart, though, because he opposed TR when the Republican Party fell apart in 1912. He was Speaker from 1925 to 1931. Out of the Cincinnati area. But here's the thing. He was Speaker from 1925 to 1931, and that means that he presided over the House of Representatives when the government operated more on a philosophy closer to the heart of, say, Donald Trump, where you just let the markets run wild and let it turn into the greatest gambling den of thieves in the entire world. He engaged in punishment of progressives who supported Bob La Follette instead of Calvin Coolidge in the election of 1924. Nice guy. He tried to gather to himself many of the powers that had been stripped from Uncle Joe Cannon. But they worked. See, there's a reason I brought this up. He reached across the aisle to Democrats. And made friends with the Democratic minority leader. And every day they would all get together with some hand-picked Democrats and Republicans in a room in the Capitol where nobody knew where they were. It became known as the Bureau of Education. And all those white men would get together, get liquored up, and make deals across party lines. 1925 to 1931. The Congress he led ended on March 4th, 1931. And expected to be Speaker of the new Congress, but his time was taken up with being dead. Here's the thing, though. 1925 to 1931 was nothing if not an era of excess and corruption. Longworth was described as debonair and aristocratic, given to wearing spats and carrying a gold-headed cane, perpetually cheerful, quick with a joke or witty retort, and unfailingly friendly. He seemed never to have a care and made hard decisions with such ease and detachment that some people wondered if anything at all really mattered to him. ...1925 to 1931. How much evil was done by that Republican Congress in that era? How much groundwork was laid for the miseries of 1929, 1930, 1931... Remember, FDR wouldn't even enter the White House until March of 1932, while the Republican majorities watched the nation descend in free fall into economic hell. So naturally, 31 years after his death, in 1962, the same year that JFK is laying the cornerstone for the Rayburn Building, they named that middle building the Longworth House Office Building, because he was Speaker when the building was authorized. But he was also Speaker when horrible acts of economic vandalism were perpetrated on his watch. So, I can't go to D.C. and not wonder about the history behind these sorts of things. And in the case of Washington, D.C., what you'll find is that as often as not, there's something pretty skeevy going on. The fact that the Cannon House Office Building is the Cannon House Office Building, again, that's named after a vicious, vicious autocrat who had no more belief in the ideals of democracy than the Pope does. In being a Southern Baptist. Yeah. And hallelujah. Thanks very kindly to Samson and to an anonymous member of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Charlene's challenge has been met. And $50 of the 230 remaining have been met as well. So that means we got 180 bucks to go to finish fundraising for the month of June. Yay. And if we can't do that tonight, maybe we can do it tomorrow. If we do it tonight, well, hell, we'll be, we'll have 4 days of fundraising free radio, and wouldn't that be a delight? Meanwhile, let's run out New Mexico way. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
What's going on, Gary?
It's Gary. Oh, not much. I know the Iran thing with the missile shoot down is ancient history by now. And I don't know if the Iranians were filing something with the UN or whatever, but, you know, that won't be get much coverage anyway. But, you know, I started thinking about that. And I started thinking, I said, well, let me do a little math. Let me look into the math of it. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give the community some math, okay? Some of the math comes from the video that the purported video of from the Iranians, and some comes from the U.S. side, the purported elevation of the aircraft and the distance, the total distance of the shootdown. So on the video side, it's a 28-second launch-to-destruction time. And the U.S. claims that the distance was 70 kilometers, which, you know, is kind of getting up there when you're talking about ranges of surface-to-air missiles. But anyway, so, you know, it says, okay, let me just go ahead and accept that and accept their elevation of 22,209 feet. And when you do the math, okay, that comes out to a trip of 44 miles for the missile.
Okay.
Okay. And the missile has to be going 1.57 miles per second, or 5,650 miles an hour, or a little bit over Mach 7. Okay, which I don't think there's a surface-to-air missile system that goes Mach 7, number one. I know some of the ranges on some of them, you know, I'm kind of going from you know, some of the old U-2 stuff and the SR-71 stuff.
Right.
Where, you know, I mean, they could gun it and outrun, you know, a missile. You know, like a SAM. And I guess the Soviets ended up with a SAM that could go up to about 80,000 feet, which was sort of the cruising altitude for the U-2 and the SR-71. And, you know, so I started thinking that, you know, this is a pretty tall order given the information.
Yeah, it sounds a little sketchy, doesn't it?
That the U.S. has given us the 70 kilometers for the travel distance, and the 22,209 for the elevation of the craft at the time of the shootdown. And, you know, you just do that math. I mean, you know, 70 kilometers is about 43 and a half miles. And then when you add the elevation of another,
call it 4 miles.
Four point something miles. You come out with a trip of 44 miles in 28 seconds. Okay. So if the video's valid, you know, and you know, the numbers given us from our side are valid, you know, they both can't be true. The mathematics just aren't there. You know, there's nothing out there going Mach 7. You know, I mean, most of your top-of-the-line surface-to-air missiles, you know, run probably up around 4, Mach 4. Okay, somewhere in general, in the Mach 2 to Mach 4 range.
Yeah, because there are no human beings on board, so the G stresses, yeah, right, they can exceed.
Yeah, Mach 7. But if you look at the timeline, You know what I mean? You look at the timeline, I mean, that definitely would put it, you know, probably in their waters, you know, especially if it was, you know, I'm not familiar, you know, supposedly this was their own, you know, sort of copy, modified, you know, internally produced missile system.
Yeah.
This three core dad, the best information that I found on it. And it seems like there was a lot of information available. You know, if you just type in three core dad, you get a bunch of different things on information on that, on the system, the self-produced Iranian, surface to air missile system, you know? And so, I mean, so there's a big gap, which is obvious, between the coordinates in and of themselves. But to me, you know, to me, I'm just guessing that the best evidence is the video. You know what I mean? If that's a legitimate video, 28-second flight time, you know, from launch to striking the target.
I'm terribly, terribly paranoid about all this stuff, because I don't think lying is beyond this administration.
Well, of course not.
And I can't help wondering if there was maybe somewhere closer that might have more effectively done the deed. Because, you know, the Saudis are scumbags, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a vested interest in this. And they would, and they'd like to see us do their dirty work. And so why not dummy something up? I mean, the business with the boat and the trying to put, yeah, that makes no sense at all. Coupled with the fact that why the hell couldn't, you know, could the Soviets fake something like that? In a heartbeat, they could.
A so-called length of mine, you know, which I have no fucking clue what that is. I guess it's sort of some sort of Iranian produced mine. But I started looking at that. I started looking at that and saying, okay, here comes these guys. They come cruising up on the boat, and they're standing up on the bow of the boat, which to me looked to be, you know, at least 3 feet above the waterline.
Yeah.
Where they're standing, plus the height of the individuals. You know, so it's, you're getting in the neighborhood of 9 to 10 feet above the waterline of the.
Yeah, and by the way, limpets are not something that is exclusive. That's the thing. They're not something exclusive to the Iranians. It's a fairly old sort of technology.
Yeah, but do they fucking jump out of the water and stick to the ship?
No, they've got powerful magnets on them, and they thunk, and they attach to the ship.
Yeah, but they're not going to attach 10 feet above the water line of the vessel.
Not unless there's enough of a surge of water to carry it up there.
In other words, it's just floating around and happens to catch a wave and,
yeah, kafunk,
sticks to the ship, you know. Well, yeah, but it just seemed like an odd placement of the so-called unexploded mine, you know, 10 feet above the waterline. You know, to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, you have no idea who these folks are in the boat or not in the boat. But one thing I did see, one of the first responders to one of those tankers was an Iranian fireboat. And went and was putting out the fire. Are you aware of that?
No.
Yeah. It was, I don't know if it was a
And apparently these things are placed, like by divers.
The mines.
Yeah.
Well, how the hell would you get it 10 feet above?
Well, we're back to the same problem.
No, I don't agree with that on that score. Divers would be sloshing around.
There's a long history of it. You know, diving suits with rebreathing units and a little clip that carries the limpet mine on the front of the diver, swims up, ba-dunk, and, you know. But, again, 10 feet above the waterline, that guy shouldn't be in the Navy. That guy should be in the NBA.
Yeah, well, it's some of the anomalies, you know, that I see, with the cargo tankers and then the shoot down, you know, things don't add up, obviously, but I know the Iranians don't have a surface to air missile that goes Mach 7.
I think that's a pretty safe guess.
That's about all. Yeah, well.
And the other side of it is, and Todd in South Carolina, Stan, just pointed out, the occupants of the ship witnessed the missile, not a mine. The greater media dropped that storyline. Yeah, the Japanese make no bones about it. They said it was a missile that hit the ship.
Well, I heard missile or artillery round, one or two. But I don't know where they were located relative to shore. You know, at the time of the incident, you know.
Drones have missiles on them.
Yeah, some of them do, yeah. Some of them are armed with...
I mean, there's... There are too many variables to just swallow what this administration is putting forward whole.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if the Gulf of Tonkin was shabby, Gary, this is 10 times as shabby. This rises to the level of the outright silly.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. Just cross your fingers that Putin will keep everything in check.
God, that's sad but true. Gary, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Who'll keep Trump in check? Maybe he did. Who the hell knows? You never know.
No, you can't. Not in this era, not in this age. No, you cannot know.
Yeah. Well, just one last comment, Bob, that all the truth seekers and Kincaidians out there, you know what I mean? I'm still dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, and whoever our nominee is, that's who I'm voting for.
Well, that's where I am, too.
Doesn't make a difference, you know.
Yeah, anybody's better than Trump.
Well, it's even Satan.
I
vote for Satan.
I think he's already in the White House, but yeah, I get your point.
Yeah.
Gary, have a good evening, my friend. Thanks again.
You too.
Bye now. And so we come to the end of the program, and a challenge to go on the table here at the very end, courtesy of Darlene, another founding member of the Sorority of Leans. One or more horn listeners kick in $80. I'll cover the remaining 100, and we'll be done with fundraising for June. Thank you, Darlene. Probably a little too late for anybody to respond right now, but we'll carry it. To the overnight crew and see how they respond, and I'll let you know. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with the interruptions this evening. Sorry about the tornado warning-ish. My God, the sky outside looks like it's on fire in the west, so I guess most of that front has passed over. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who met Charlene's challenge this evening. Thank you to Keith and to Glenn, to Ralphs and to Jude and to Samson and to our anonymous contributor. Thank you so very much. Thanks to Darlene for offering the challenge. Hopefully that'll be met. By the time tomorrow rolls around, we'll have Fundraising Free Radio. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve earlier in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, head on .live, monitoring from the wilds of Las Vegas. The farms, I think, in Spanish, is it not? Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.